I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Listen up, fantasy baseball friends. Did you know that your chances of winning on draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why you need to try Draft. No more getting crushed by the pros. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft. Play in a real live MLB draft right now. Be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use the promo code Felsky. That's right, play in a real money draft for free just by using the promo code Felsky, F-E-L-S-K-E. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it, they're even offering Hit and Season listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and play free right now with the promo code Felsky. Void where prohibited, must be 18 or older. See website for details. Offer must be redeemed within 14 days.
Swing a long drive! There it is! Number 500! The career 500th home run for Michael Jack Smith!
Oh, yes! Rollins has won it! They stream out of the dugout!
Yeah.
Rollins by near third! This game is over!
It is out of here! 50th home run of the year for Ryan Howard.
Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time. And it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and
Howard. Oh, Chase is going to keep going. And he's safe at home plate.
Wow.
Chase Utley, you are the man. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Now batting for the Phillies, second baseman John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 199. I'm your host, John Stolness, from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. I also write about fantasy baseball for numberfire.com. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. You can also follow the show on Facebook and Instagram as well. Coming up, we're going to talk a lot about Rhys Hoskins and the Home Run Derby, and we've got a special mailbag edition of the podcast this week, just one shy of 200. I hope to have an announcement about a big guest for episode number 200. Y'all might remember that for episode number 100, we had Matt Klentak on the program trying to line something up for episode number 200 as well. Hoping it happens. We'll just see. I'll leave the details there at the moment, and we'll keep our fingers crossed, see if we can't make something cool happen for next week when we'll be recording right around the All-Star break. Joining me, because I haven't had a chance to chat with him a whole lot lately, and Justin's in a bit of a transition period right now, doing a lot of different things, and wanted to take some time to chat with my good buddy Justin Clue from The Good Fight. Justin and I usually like to tackle these mailbag episodes together, so Justin's joining episode number 199 for the entire podcast. You know him, of course, from the Sunday night edition of Hittin' Season. He also writes for Baseball Prospectus, and he's one half of the podcast duo of The Dirty Inning, along with Dr. Trevor Strunk, a fantastic Phillies podcast that you can get on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, all those different things. Hey, Justin, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, John, if there's one thing I wasn't going to miss this summer, it's us talking about the Phillies and baseball in general. But to be honest, I wasn't aware you were recording these conversations and releasing them for public, consumption. So that's a little bit of a I'm a little startled by that. I thought we were just talking about the Phillies, but no, that's fine. That's fine. I feel like that's okay. But if you have something you want me to sign, I feel like that'd probably be appropriate.
I guess I should have, in broadcasting, we usually ask for the interviewee's permission when we're doing an interview. So yeah, these are more conversations of two colleagues writing for the same website. I just assumed, I guess, a level of intimacy here with releasing this information to the public. I'll make note of that moving forward. Do I have your permission to record you for broadcast today, Justin?
I mean, I always did wonder why he would tell me who I was every time we were about to have a regular conversation and the things that I do, and then do the same for yourself.
I was going to say, you didn't think...
What is that for?
You didn't think my intros were... You thought this is just how I had normal conversations with people with long introductions? You think I numbered my conversations with people in numerical order?
John, you're a classy, gregarious conversationalist. I just assumed this was part of being on that level. I thought I was there with you.
Yeah, I do remember conversation number 65 that we had together that time.
thought this was all just in your personal files, just marked away, just so you could enjoy our conversations later on.
No, this is actually going to be for broadcast, and so hopefully the folks who get the Hit and Season podcasts every week will enjoy our witty banter back and forth. And we're going to do a mailbag here coming up in just a few minutes. We got a lot of good mailbag questions on Twitter that we'll spend the next 45 minutes to an hour talking about. But we've got a first place baseball team to talk about here, Justin. The Phillies back in first by a half a game in the National League East after their Thursday game, the makeup game against the Orioles in Baltimore, which you went to today. Pretty cool. The Phillies now 52-40 on the season after splitting a four-game series against the Mets and winning this one-game makeup game against the Orioles. And like I said, the Atlanta Braves were idle today, so they lead Atlanta by a half a game in the National League East. You were at the game, Justin. Tell me what your thoughts of the one-game pit stop in Baltimore.
Well, you know, it was a game where the Phillies' flaws were pretty on display. There were like three defensive miscues, two errors very early on. That was a Michael Franco throwing error, a Scott Kingery throwing error, I believe. Both of which led to Orioles threats that wouldn't have existed otherwise. I believe they wound up with a runners on first and third situation that was completely born from defensive Phillies issues. And then, of course, there was the bullpen. Of course, there was Tommy Hunter. So it was a game where the Phillies, we all obviously know, ultimately won the game. They had to work around like the issues that we've been talking about all season long,
yeah,
which is one of the main ways this team wins games. Like they're not perfect by a long shot. We know that. And this was a game where they just had to work around the stuff that we've seen them do all year. So we was more defensive mistakes, more Tommy Hunter. And as you and I were talking before we started the podcast, it was almost a relief to see Tommy Hunter, who gave up a home run, I believe, on the first pitch he threw to make it a one run game. And when it had been a 5-0 game,
yeah.
And it was good. It was almost a relief that he Tommy Huntered so hard immediately because he didn't walk anybody. He didn't play around and let guys on base when that home run happened. He just gave up the terrible pitch and the disappointing home run immediately. So in a way, they just worked around the issues that they have, which is not a solution. It was just more of the same kind of like Phillies baseball where there's that line where like a 500 team plays and, they tend to live just above it. And occasionally for a couple of games, they are a little below it. And sometimes they're very far below it, but they just tend to keep their heads above water just. And this was just one of those games. And they should beat the Orioles. The Orioles are not a good baseball team, and they're about to get a lot worse. So this is a game they should have just stopped in and won. So it's a good thing they did. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter how. But their flaws were very much on display tonight.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And I don't want to harp on the bad notes altogether, but just to put a button on the Tommy Hunter stuff, he's allowed a run in 12 of his 35 appearances this year, has a 4.80 ERA on the season. In his last 11 innings, he's allowed 8 runs, 2 home runs, and 22 base runners in his last 11 innings. That's basically 2 base runners an inning on average. He's not going to stay in the bullpen for a whole lot longer if he keeps this up, unless it's as a long man or something like that. Definitely not worth the money they went out and paid him this offseason so far. But as we all know, with relief pitchers, they can turn around. But right now, the guy just stinks, and they don't really have a whole lot of – they got to stop putting him in high-leverage situations for a while. The problem is, you know, the bullpen has been very good in July. I think of an ERA under 2 in July after so many struggles. But, again, we just see the bullpen up and down with all these different guys in there, and Tommy Hunter still has not – gotten on a roll. But let's talk about some of the good stuff. A nice game by Jorge Alfaro here on Thursday, a 3-hit game, hit a big 2-run double. And then what turned out to be the game-winning home run that gave the Phillies a 5-0 lead. Jorge Alfaro had been struggling in July. He had 3 hits this month coming into the game on Thursday. Yeah, exactly. And he was much better here on Thursday against the Orioles.
Yeah, that was very exciting to see because, you know, obviously there was always a triple away from the cycle talk.
Right.
A couple innings left, which, you know, not a lot of talk about that. But I happened to be sitting with some Phillies fans, so it obviously came up. Odds were low and expectations were low that Jorge Alfaro was going to leg out a triple near the end of the game. But in general, it's just good to see him come alive against any sort of pitching because he's a guy who really was weighed down by strikeouts early in the season. And like
still
you said,
is.
He was a guy. He's a guy who's he's been struggling, and those are his struggles have been very apparent. So to see him break a couple of hits off against even a weak Orioles team is it's just good to see because he's got a reservoir of power in there. He just doesn't make contact a whole lot. So he gave that ball a ride. So when he does get a hold of one, he tends to really get a hold of it.
Really, nobody on the team hits the ball harder than Jorge Alfaro. He just doesn't make contact with the ball nearly enough. But again, just his rookie season and his job this year has been to focus on defense. And I think as defense becomes second nature to him, he can really work on his offensive game. And then you might see an explosion from him offensively, which would just be awesome to see. Nice bounce back game from Nick Pivetta as well after 2 shaky starts. His spot in the rotation was not looking very secure with the nice spot start from Eniel De Los Santos earlier this week. And so Nick Pivetta really needed to come up with a big game. And it looks like he righted the ship a little bit against a very bad Baltimore offense. It's kind of funny. We saw the Phillies split a 4-game series against the Mets. You know, even against a team as bad as the Mets, they still managed to win 2 walk-offs in the 4-game series against the Phils. So you never quite know. Whenever you're playing the Mets, Justin, no matter how bad they are, they just figure out a way to steal your soul a little bit, at least 1 game a series. They seem to do this to the Phils.
It's Brandon Nimmo now, man. He's
he's so good.
He's my guy that I despise playing against. It used to be, you know, Jose Reyes when he would go through the like 10-minute celebrations after scoring a run, but like now, I mean, Jose Reyes is nothing now. It's Nimmo just running to first base on a walk. Just everything about him drives you nuts. It's like just stop. The Mets are bad. You're having a bad season. You can't be good. Stop it. And he won't. He won't stop. He works such deep counts. He runs up pitch counts on Phillies pitchers who that's the last thing they need. He always manages to get on base, and obviously he hit the walk-off home run to make that series a split instead of a potential Phillies win. So he's they don't see the Mets again until what, August? Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
So that'll be fine. It's not like that was a particularly brutal series. It's just, man, the Mets just tend to just stab them in the back with those walk-offs, and it is an unpleasant experience every time. So I'm happy to not see the Mets or Brandon Nimmo till August.
Yeah, the 2 wins the Phillies got, one of them was a 3-0 win in which all 3 runs were driven in by Aaron Nola. And in the series finale, they got shut out in 10 innings. And in the game, even on Thursday against the Orioles, they got 14 hits, but 11 singles and only scored 5 runs on 14 hits. I mean, that right there is the argument why players say they try to hit line drives and try to hit doubles and home runs now, because the Phillies with runners in scoring position had a lot of trouble in the game here on Thursday. And this is not a team that is able to string 3, 4, 5 hits together very often. They are a team that has to hit the ball out of the yard. You see how hard it is now with pitchers pitching so much harder, you know, with breaking stuff so much better and with defensive shifts in there. It's really hard to string together a bunch of hits in an inning and score 3, 4, 5 runs in an inning anymore, unless one of those hits is a 2 or a 3-run home run. And that's kind of why you're seeing players go after the double, go after the home run, because 4 singles anymore get you maybe a run or 2. And that feels like a lot of offensive production, but it's generally not. And that's kind of what we saw in the Mets series. And that's what we saw here in the game against the Orioles on Thursday. Let's move on real quick to the All-Star game. And this week, Aaron Nola was named the lone Phillies representative to the All-Star team, Justin, and obviously very deserving. He's one of the top 10 pitchers in baseball, a top 5 pitcher in the National League. There's an outside chance he could start the All-Star game, but it's highly unlikely. They did move his start to Saturday the Saturday before the All-Star game instead of Sunday so that he could pitch at least one inning in the All-Star game. There's a rule that if you make a start the Sunday before the All-Star game, you are not allowed to pitch. And so Aaron Nola, we will at least probably see in the game now since his start was moved to Saturday. And just it's amazing to see, Justin, how much better he is than what we were told he was going to be when he was drafted and when he was in the minors and in his first even couple years in the majors. Even Pete Maccannon last year was saying he sees Aaron Nola as a number three starter. So it's kind of funny when you see Aaron Nola has become. He's become one of the top 10 pitchers in baseball and one of the top five pitchers in the National League right now. But do you think the Phillies kind of got gypped here with just getting one all-star here as a team that is in first place?
Oh, I see what this is. You're not using the word all-star snubs, but this is exactly
I'm working
what
around
you're,
it.
You're, okay, yes. I see what's going on here.
Yes, you see now.
So I kind of wrote a little bit about this. I didn't want to do a Phillies all-star snubs post, but I did write something about how it's perfectly fine for the Phillies to have only one all-star this year. And I mean, in general, the Phillies could have one all-star for the next 5 years. It doesn't really matter. Liz and I talked about the all-star game and our thoughts on that on an episode of Continued Success. And I'm not upset, but obviously it's more fun to see more of the players from the team you follow on the all-star team. But the fact of the matter is you're basing this off of part of one half of the season that that these guys are getting in the game. So that leaves very little room for error as far as getting on the actual team goes. And some positions, like I believe I read on it might have been Baseball Prospectus, there's like six deserving first basemen in the National League who could have been on the team based on like statistical output and who was on the team like comparatively. And then in the AL, there's like guys who, you know, Jose Abreu and Mitch Moreland. So it was like, oh, okay, clearly there's a deficit here. So, you know, Carlos Santana had never had a chance, and nobody's he hasn't been in the conversation. No. So the people who have, who people consider gyps, like Odubel Herrera, Sir Anthony Dominguez, and Rhys Hoskins. I mean, yeah, you can have a conversation about why they deserve it, but it's also very easy to point out why they were just never going to be on the team. Like they all had stretches where they did not perform or pretty clearly, like stretches where they were hitting under 200 for what is at this point, you know, decent chunks of the season. I believe it was
a month at a time in some cases. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the month of May that was particularly brutal for Rhys Hoskins. And I know we're going to get into that based on one of the questions, but yeah, I mean, this is like you were saying, not too long ago, Aaron Nola was considered by his own manager to be probably a number three starter. And honestly, based on the young pitchers that the Phillies have been looking at since last year, there was no one who they had until the second half of last season that was really pinned from the get-go as a number one ace starter. Like there was no frontline guy who was like, this guy's going to, we got him to be that guy. It was more like, all right, we have some guys, they have some good stuff. There's some kinks they need to work out. There's some development that needs to take place. And we're going to let that happen, but through the gift of time and hope that someone, or hopefully more than one someone's, emerges as a guy who could potentially fill that role. And if they don't, then, hey, look, there's the free agent market. And through development, I mean, that's what this year exists for. And last year and the years that they're using to experiment with the trade with the prospects they've gotten through trades during this rebuild, they've discovered Aaron Nola, and he is their stopper now, more so than I think even Jake Arrieta right now. Arrieta was great, but Aaron Nola has been much more consistent, and that's honestly how you get on the All-Star team, by having a very good, very consistent first half. And among the Phillies, he's the one who's had the most consistent success in the first half of doing his job. So no, it doesn't bum me out to see him. It's actually very exciting that the one Philly on the All-Star team is somebody who's having their first All-Star experience. Presumably it's going to be the first of many, and I'm not going to be surprised in the next couple of years if a couple more guys get to have their first All-Star game, because that's where this team is right now. Yeah. A lot of young players, a lot of whom are still, you know, maybe some are reaching the end of their tenure as young players who we're waiting to see what happens with them. But I think there's some really high talent on this team that hasn't seen its even full potential yet. But that full potential lies in consistency. I think we've seen what the output can be when guys reach their ceiling. It's just going to be about reaching that ceiling for longer stretches of time.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. And Aaron Nola, we've talked about it before. His consistency is because he's been able to get left-handed hitters out with the changeup. That's been just a total difference maker for him. And so that has kept his home run total down. It allows him to, you know, kind of get past rough starts. And it's what's made him an ace, a true ace pitcher in Major League Baseball. I mean, it was one of the things we always used to argue about, you know, in Philly's Twitter circles, is Aaron Nola an ace? I don't think anybody argues the other way any longer, but it is certainly better. I think Aaron Nola, if you're going to have a lone representative, it's Aaron Nola is more preferential than Pat Nashak last year, who we all knew was leaving the team in a week or two after the All-Star game anyway. And he's back now, but you know, it certainly is an All-Star that makes you think, like, you know, okay, here's a guy who's a part of the core going forward. And that's always a good thing. And as I talked about with Paul Boyer on the Hit and Season I recorded for Patreon members on Sunday night, you could argue Odubel Herrera. I think he's probably the only other guy really, other than Sir Anthony, deserving of a shot. But there are also other National League outfielders who probably have better cases than Odubel Herrera. Brandon Nimmo being sure. One of them.
It is a popularity contest to an extent.
Very
and
much.
That's totally fine.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a guy like Odubel Herrera, he's probably better known to fans of NL East teams at this point, but I'd wager he's still not like a hot commodity among National League, voters at this point, especially in a season where he hasn't been ripping the cover off the ball for the entire time. He's had a terrific season. I wouldn't change anything about it, but like, come on, he's clearly, you know, raised the bar and
right.
He's one of the best hitters on the team.
Yeah.
But among the entire league, it's pretty clear that, yeah, there's still a bunch of other guys who are in front of him in line. And as far as Sir Anthony Dominguez goes, another really exciting pitcher, especially against the background of a bullpen that's really been an Achilles heel for this team. You know, there's a billion pitchers in the National League.
There is.
Not many people know who this young pitcher is,
right.
Who came up when. Like, he hasn't been even up for the entire half of the first half of the season.
Right.
So
right.
He also was a long shot from the get-go as well.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to make an argument for anybody other than Aaron Nola and not be a homer about it. So congratulations to Aaron Nola for making the All-Star team. And, you know, I do forget sometimes that Odubel Herrera did make an All-Star team once already in his career. So it kind of flew right out of my head as I was talking about it on Sunday night. But, you know, Herrera does have that All-Star experience, and he'll probably get back to another one at some point. The big surprising news we found out this week is Rhys Hoskins is going to be in the Home Run Derby. And it kind of took everybody by surprise. I think I might have been the first person on Twitter, on Philly's Twitter, to mention it, because I was working actually putting together the Continued Success podcast that you and Liz recorded this week, which was excellent, by the way. And if you want to hear it, you got to go to patreon.com/hittandseason to get it and become a $5 a month member to listen to that fantastic podcast. And as I was putting your show together this week, I was just had ESPN on in the background, and here out of the corner of my ear, and joining in the Home Run Derby this year, the Phillies' Rhys Hoskins. I was like, man, I'm on vacation this week with my family down in Myrtle Beach, and so I was just thinking, oh, I must have missed the announcement earlier in the day. No one knew about it. I mean, ESPN waited until 10:38 at night to go out and name their All-Star, their Home Run Derby participants. And
prime time.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the team didn't make an announcement first before ESPN did. It wasn't online anywhere. It was really surprising and kind of funny, but it was very welcome news. It's exciting. We'll be able to have a reason, even more of a reason, to watch the Home Run Derby this year. Rhys Hoskins is going to participate, and he's going to take on Milwaukee's Jesus Aguilar in the first round of the Derby. I know there are some people who worry about being in the Home Run Derby, worrying someone's swing, because we remember when Bobby Abreu in 2005 destroyed the Home Run Derby, finished with a record of 41 home runs, which it was a record then. It's since been beaten, but he hit 24 homers in the first round. You know, he came into the All-Star break. I think he hit like 3 or 5 home runs or something after the All-Star break, after hitting like 15 or 20 going into it. So he definitely struggled with his home runs after the Home Run Derby. But and we've seen that happen to other players. But as Mike Petriello from MLB.com noted, one, there is no correlation. Like, if you look at the numbers, it doesn't bear out. All the home run derby participants, they really don't suffer any drop-off, and any drop-off that occurs is likely just due to natural regression anyway. So, but does it worry you at all about Rhys Hoskins being in the home run derby and screwing up his swing?
No, everybody needs to relax, have some fun. There's a Phillies player in the home run derby. I mean, I feel like there's – this kind of sounds – I mean, I feel like somebody must have – enough people, like, declined that Rhys Hoskins was invited. I don't mean that as a slight against him. I just mean – you know,
well, Aaron Judge said he didn't want to participate. I don't think Giancarlo Stanton is in it. I think there are some guys, some notable players who said they did not want to participate this year. So, yeah, I think I don't know that it's a slight against Hoskins. It's just some of the guys didn't want to do it.
Yeah. I mean, clearly he's a home run hitter. I don't know if I'd identify him as like a slugger, you know, like the Ryan Howard type that typically goes in there, like a Giancarlo Stanton, whose job is to just hit home runs. But no, I think it's just fun. And that's what this is supposed to be, especially the home run derby. There's like a bunch of kids running around in the outfield. Like, for God's sake, if you're really sitting there going like, oh, this is going to mess up his swing can get messed up for a million different reasons. And, you know, I feel like we're going to discuss this in a little bit, but like, you know, it's not going to, if the home run, even if it was the home run derby, you'd never be able to singularly identify it as the cause. And I really just doubt that, that would be a reason to just get upset that he was, on the national stage for this like carnival before the All-Star game. I think it's just a cool thing. And the fact that it really snuck up on everybody at almost 11 o'clock at night was also very fun. So I think with only one guy in the All-Star game, it's very cool to have somebody show up in the home run derby. And Rhys Hoskins is a great young player who can knock the crap out of the ball. So, you know, I hope he wins.
Yeah, he and Aaron Nola are the two faces of the franchise, so I think it's fitting that those two guys are going to be representing the Phillies at the All-Star game in different capacities. But the Bobby Abreu stat, I knew I wrote it down, and I found it in 2005. He went into the home run derby with 24 home runs and then hit just 6 the rest of the season. But as Petriello noted, in 2014, when Yoenis Cespedes won the home run derby, the 8 derby participants saw their weighted on base average fall 17 points. But all the other All-Stars who were in the All-Star game but were not in the derby, their WOBA fell 33 points, which was more than double what the home run participants did. 2015, same kind of thing. The Derby participants, Todd Frazier won, and the 8 Derby participants dropped from a 380 first half WOBA to a 341, which was a 39-point decline. All of the non-Derby All-Stars fell back, too, from 364 to 339. So it wasn't as huge a drop. And then in 2016, the same thing happened again. I mean, there was a 37-point drop between the home run Derby participants and a 39-point drop between all of the other All-Stars who weren't in the Derby. So it's the numbers don't bear it out. Maybe there is a player here and there who got their swing screwed up by being in the home run Derby, but it's certainly not a chronic thing, and it's certainly not something that I would worry about as far as Rhys Hoskins is concerned. And it's going to be cool to see another Philly in the home run Derby, because remember in 2005 and 2006, seeing Bobby Abreu and Ryan Howard win it in back to back seasons, that was really cool. Baseball's supposed to be fun and cool, and that's all this is. It's fun and it's cool.
If the Phillies and Rhys Hoskins are one home run derby from seeing it all unravel, then there's a lot more wrong with this than Rhys Hoskins' swing, honestly.
Exactly. No, you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly right. Well, let's get to the mailbag, because the first question that we had to tackle was about Rhys Hoskins. Shiner at Here for the B33R on Twitter tweeted, Hoskins hasn't hit a dinger in 11 games. Is he about to go into another power slump? And is this who he is, a streaky home run hitter? Justin, I think he is. I think this is just kind of what Rhys Hoskins is. And we talked about it a little bit in previous podcasts, especially in May when he wasn't failing to hit home runs. He wasn't hitting anything. He couldn't. His strikeouts were way up. His walks were way down. You know, I'm willing to live with a home run drought, because I know he'll hit him in bunches. He'll hit 5 in a week, and he'll hit 7 in 2 weeks. And, you know, he's still hitting singles and doubles right now. He's not hitting the ball out of the yard. I'd like to see him hit the ball out of the yard a little bit more. But, you know, what do you think? I think this is just who he is, Justin. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, thus far, yes, he is a streaky hitter, and he's got that special niche kind of streak that, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, Mark Reynolds kind of streakiness where he's either homering or he's striking out. Like his cooled off periods aren't surrounded by like a lot of hard contact where the ball's not just landing. It's strikeouts from his debut last season on August 10th till the end of August. You know, he went on that tear and he hit 11 home runs and only had 14 strikeouts and 84 at bats. And then to close out the season, he had 0 home runs and 20 strikeouts and 54 at bats from September 15th till the beginning of October. And that kind of continued into this season. In May, he had 2 home runs and 32 strikeouts and 87 at bats. In June, he had 8 home runs and 16 strikeouts and 77 at bats. He quadrupled his home run total and halved his strikeout total from 1 month to the next in just about the same number of at bats. So that just begs the question, like, all right, so why is a hitter streaky? Like, what's he doing wrong? And the answer is it could be any number of things. There's so many little intricacies that go into a swing, especially with a young hitter who can get in his own head, especially when he starts going in a tailspin like Rhys Hoskins is capable of. The thing is, Rhys Hoskins has always seemed like he has a pretty good head on his shoulders, and he's got a really good mental makeup, so he never gets too stuck in his strikeout downward spirals that he can't pull out of them. It's unfortunate that that's just part of his game, but it's also something that we've seen. And honestly, there's a Fangraphs post I was reading from last season that was talking about streaky hitters, and the numbers they ran on some of the streakiest hitters in the game, like Carlos Correa, Chris Davis, Nelson Cruz, Mark Trumbo, Jason Hayward. They said when a streak lasts 7 days, it becomes extremely common for that streak to last up to 21 days. So just looking, if you're someone looking at the numbers, that's kind of the magic number. And we might be looking at a Rhys Hoskins who at this point lacks consistency to be an everyday home run hitter and might be finding success or failures in batches of 21 days at a time. So you're just looking at that kind of player right now, unfortunately. And you got to just trust that from what we've seen, he's going to have the mental makeup to make the adjustments he needs to make to pull out of his bad streaks so he can get into the hot ones. And from what we've seen so far, he does. He seems like a healthy guy who's able to not take himself too seriously, as the comments he made after running face first into that wall in New York seem to indicate. That's just on brand for him to be able to take things lightly. So hopefully that as long as he maintains that, I think eventually he'll be fine. And hopefully we'll be able to see a more consistent Rhys Hoskins in the future. But for the moment, it's streakiness is just, you know, part of his game. It's a part of a lot of the Phillies games, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that leg kick, and Odubel Herrera has it. And a couple other guys have it. When you have that leg kick, you know, a lot of things can kind of go out of whack a little bit. And that's one of the things that he was talking about back in May, was his leg kick was off, his timing was off. And we've seen that with Herrera, and we've seen Herrera turn it around pretty quick sometimes, and he can look terrible from one at bat, and then the next at bat he's hitting the ball 450 feet to right field. Hoskins is the same way. When he's going well and he's getting around on the high fastball, it can be a sight to see. So I don't get too worried about the— go ahead.
Oh, I just, you know what, people began profiling Hoskins after last year and that you know, historic tear he went on as a rookie and hitting home runs, and I think everybody wanted to find this like special thing about him. But the truth is, when you read about like what he does preparation wise, it's like, oh, he shows up early, he watches lots of film, he takes all these reps in the cage, then he takes all these reps at BP. And it's like, yeah, he does the things you read about like great young hitters doing. Like, he puts the time in. And when they ask him about like, what are you going to do to adjust now that you're struggling, he says things like, yeah, look, I'm going to stick with the preparation do my homework, and eventually this'll end. So it's like it's a boring answer, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, that's kind of what you have to do. All you can do is hit your way out of a slump, and that's what he sets himself up to do.
Yep. No, I totally agree. And, you know, I think Hoskins is going to be fine, even if he has another big slump. I think we saw, and it was a relief, that he's not Dom Brown, that he is a good player who's going to go through slumps, but will come out of it. We got a lot of questions, at least I got a lot of questions on Twitter about the Manny Machado rumors. And, you know, just before we get into the specific question, I don't see a Manny Machado rental here for the Phillies. And I think most baseball people are starting to look at other teams. They say the Yankees made a strong offer for him today, which I don't know that I necessarily believe, but you know, that's out there. That we've heard the Brewers and the Dodgers and a couple other teams, the Indians are involved. There's a lot of teams that want Manny Machado. It's just a matter of whether or not they're going to give up anything of real value for 2 months of a player. But of course, 2 months of Manny Machado could be the difference between playing in a one game wild card, playing in a five game divisional series, or missing the playoffs altogether. So, this question came from Joe Flyguys Plaza at JE Plaza 14. If we go get Manny Machado, either in the offseason or at the trade deadline, what is Scott Kingery's long-term position outlook? Does he stay at shortstop, change positions, or does someone else get moved, i.e. Franco Hernandez Crawford? And I think, Justin, you will agree with me, the obvious answer here is that Scott Kingery's position is second base, and he has been signed to a long-term deal. Cesar Hernandez is about to get expensive. Seems to me Scott Kingery's future doesn't have as much to do with Manny Machado and whether or not the Phillies get Manny Machado. It has to do with what they do with Cesar Hernandez this offseason or at the trade deadline, although I can't imagine they're going to do anything with Cesar Hernandez at the trade deadline given how good of a leadoff hitter he is for this team.
Yeah, no, I agree. For a while it was, oh, well, you just trade Cesar Hernandez and problem solved. But the Phillies have made it clear they want to hang on to him, and for good reason. He remains one of the best leadoff hitters in baseball. So I wouldn't be too eager to be rid of him either. It's an interesting question. And honestly, I've been an advocate watching Scott Kingery play this year of if you're focused less on his defensive position and more on the fact that he has struggled at the plate so much, that maybe Scott Kingery's position is a triple A so he can reheat for a little bit. We've seen a little bit more.
Well, it's probably where he should be. Yeah. I mean, it's just, that's probably where he, and a year at triple A would have been pretty good for him this year.
And it would have prevented us from having to answer questions like this because there would be less of a log jam. It wouldn't be so immediate. It's like we're including Scott Kingery. What other team would be including a guy who's hitting 220 something right now for the entire season as part of the he's just got so many good players to choose from right now. It's like, well, what about this guy? He's hitting like crap. He looks lost at the plate sometimes. He strikes out a lot. He grounds out a lot. Why is he included as part of the conversation? And the answer is, well, because we signed him to a 6-year extension before the season started, before he had played a major league inning. Now, look, I mean, Scott Kingery is extremely talented, and I think he's got a bright future in baseball. But at the moment, I'm not the only person saying that I think he could stand to get a few reps at AAA. Now, I'll say that, and then he'll break off a solid month, as we were just discussing. A lot of these guys are streaky, and they're young, and they can make an adjustment, and everything can work out. I think I agree with you that his position is second base. And we've been talking Scott Kingery, he's the only guy on this team full of platoons that can play every position. He can only play every position because they're forcing him to play every position.
Exactly.
The addition of Manny Machado at shortstop would eliminate a position that Scott Kingery has not been particularly good at playing. So he belongs at second base, and however that works out, we'll see. So I think his long-term future is there. So hopefully that's where he winds up, but I'm not eager to see any of the players involved in this situation just go away.
Right. And I don't think Kingery certainly has not been the impact player that the Phillies were hoping that he would be, that the type of player that they saw in spring training making an impact virtually every game in some capacity. He's just basically trying to keep his head above water right now at the major league level, which is to be expected for a rookie and a kid his age. Not every rookie is Juan Soto. And I think Phillies fans want to see a Juan Soto come up and just excel right away, like they saw with Rhys Hoskins last year. Let's remember, Rhys Hoskins came up and excelled right away. And I think they saw a lot of good things from Nick Williams, although Nick Williams didn't have the kind of success that Rhys Hoskins did, or Juan Soto or Ronald Acuna are having this year. But not every player follows that track. And Scott Kingery does have three hit games this month, which is not nothing. They're not, you know, he's not hitting lots of doubles and lots of triples and lots of homers. He's basically a singles guy. He's gotten a lot of infield singles so far this year. But with Scott Kingery's long-term position, it doesn't really have anything to do with the left side of the infield, as we're talking about. And one of the rumors I saw this week, Justin, was that the Phillies might be interested in Kansas City's Whit Merrifield, who is a very good player, would provide some speed on the bases. He's a good base stealer. He hits for a high average. I think you put him at the top of that lineup, or maybe down into where you normally hit Kingery in the 6 or 7 hole, and he's gonna get a lot of hits for you there. I just don't see the fit because he plays first base, second base, and in center field and in the corner outfield. Now, listen, it's great to have a guy who can naturally and is good at doing all those different positions. Ben Zobrist is a very valuable player and has been for a long time for the Rays and then the Cubs. You know, so having a guy like that on the roster is really good, but really the two positions you need settled are shortstop and third base, and Whit Merrifield doesn't play either of those two positions. So you bring Whit Merrifield in here, and now what to do with Scott Kingery and Cesar Hernandez and Aaron Altair and Nick Williams, it all gets thrown out of whack. And I can't imagine adding a player like that. Like, if the Phillies are going to add another bat, it's either got to be somebody who's going to be a bench bat or a real impact player, like an impact third baseman or shortstop. Nothing else makes a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, the reason we keep talking about Manny Machado is because he's Manny Machado. Adding a Whit Merrifield is such a lateral move that it's like, yeah, it's in the middle of that gauge. Like, the Phillies either need somebody who's prepared to not play every day but still perform better than a Valentin off the bench, or a guy like Machado who's going to come in and just, you know, be the guy immediately because that's why he was acquired. So yeah, that's the kind of deal that makes you wonder, like, what exactly the plan is. So I'm glad that it hasn't been executed yet and that everything is still in rumor form, knock on wood, because that one was not particularly exciting. It seems like it would only add to the issue that we were just discussing as far as log jams go.
I mean, I think he's better than Kingery, and I think he might be better than Aaron Altair. He's definitely better than Aaron Altair right now. He's probably better than Nick Williams. I mean, if the idea is to replace one of those guys in the outfield, okay, but Nick Williams, I think, is doing pretty well after a slow start. Altair continues to be a disaster. I don't know what his problem is this year, but he's not going to stay on this team a whole lot longer.
He was the only guy who couldn't get a hit tonight.
Yeah. I mean, he's been a disaster out there. So if the idea is to, and I think Whit Merrifield is a left-handed hitter, so you wouldn't platoon him in Nick Williams. Whit Merrifield's a very good player, and he would make this team better. I just don't see the positional fit. I don't know where they would jam him in. Without moving somebody else. You'd have to move somebody else. And let's
just
move on.
Just makes you wary of what they would give up as well for a trade like that. Like, if you're going to be giving people up, you want it to be for a difference maker. Yeah, or more of a difference maker.
Exactly. No, I think that's very fair. And, you know, kind of staying in this theme, let's go to a Twitter question from Dale Cook at Dale A. Cook. He asked, can we trust Franco's surge? Is this another hot streak, or did he finally figure it out? And then he says, also, is Kingery Crawford at short space good enough to make the playoffs? They are a combined black hole offensively. Let's tackle the Michael Franco stuff first here. Franco has been on a tear as of late, and he has his season-long numbers up to, let's see, he went 1 for 5 today, so he's got his batting average up to .272, which is second highest on the team. He's got a .320 on-base percentage and a .459 slugging percentage. He's got a weighted runs created plus of .103. He's got 12 homers and 45 RBI right now with 291 plate appearances. You know, he's Michael Franco has a 7% walk rate, which is up about 0.5% from his previous two seasons. His strikeout rate is down to 14%. People like to criticize Franco, but he never strikes out. He's not a strikeout guy. So, I mean, I would love to believe that Michael Franco is figuring this out, Justin. I would love to believe that he would stop hitting the ball on the ground all the time and that he would hit more fly balls and line drives, because we know how hard he hits the ball. And his offensive game seems to have risen his defensive game as well. He's made some great plays as of late. I would love nothing more than to believe in Michael Franco, but fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, we won't get fooled again, you know, to quote President Bush from a few years ago. You know, so it's – it's one of those deals with Michael Franco where I need to see it over a full season. I can't, even a month is not enough for me. And I think the die is cast. I think what we're seeing right now is not whether or not Michael Franco is playing himself into a long-term future with the team. I think it's he's playing himself and making himself more valuable for trade bait. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, like, of course he's doing this now, you know?
Right, exactly.
He's having the slightest bit of sustained success now. He's a little more distinguishable from the rest of the team because when we talk about the Phillies being a young team of guys who are getting playing time so they can develop or show what they can do, Michael Franco's been here, you know, for a couple of years now.
Yeah, we've got a lot of tape on him now.
And that's why we approach this so warily. We can all remember that weekend in New York where we all assumed it was his coming out party, where he knocked the crap out of the ball and helped the Phillies beat the Yankees a couple of years ago. And nothing really came of that. And that was a shame because that was supposed to be it. And every time he's had success since then, it's been like, okay, this has to be it. Because that player who created so much hype is in there somewhere. And this got talked about nonstop before the season. I remember Matt Stairs assuring people, like, look, you got to believe me. There's a real hitter in there before he departed to be on the Padres coaching staff. And everyone knew this was a big year for Michael Franco going in, that this was like, all right, you're getting your last chance here because there's a whole free agent market we're going to become a big player in with all this money to spend and this team that's closer to contention than ever. And so, of course he's doing this now. And of course he's placing himself like perfectly in that area of like, even if this is real, is it that great? Like, it's great for us.
Right,
to see.
Exactly.
We've all wanting to see him succeed for so long, but like, you know, yeah, we're talking about him now because he's pushing into 270 territory. I mean, that's
right.
Solid. It's not
and just 12 and he's only, just 12 home runs, you know.
Yeah.
And he's got a weighted runs created plus of 103 is just barely ever so slightly above league average.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that the bar now for Michael Franco?
Yeah, and that's something we talked about at the end of last year, like, how successful does he have to be to stave off the Manny Machado, the other free agent options out there at third base. And yeah, look at his numbers. I mean, he hit four doubles in three games from June 26th to June 28th. And then like before that, the rest of June, he had one double.
Yeah, right.
So it's like the guy you want to see knocking extra base hits and getting the ball over the fence is still not really doing that. Now, like, granted, I'm seeing a lot of, like, you know, and this is all subjective, but from what I've seen, I'm seeing a lot more, like, fire to Michael Franco this year. I think he's excited to be a part of this team. I think he can sense, like, where they're at. But and I think all these young players being in the same room with a manager preaching positivity has been good for him. But, like, has it had the impact that – look, if Michael Franco was hitting 320 right now, and even if he hadn't started like hitting that well until like May, then we'd be having a different conversation. We'd be like, all right, Michael Franco has arrived. Unarguably, this is what we've been waiting for. And I think we can focus on other areas because it's been a couple of months now. He hasn't come down under 300. And I think we can trust him. But trust has been the main issue the whole time.
Right.
And I love that
that's the
word that Dale used, because that's what it is with a player like him. Like, can we trust this? Because we've seen it before. And I want to, but at this point, you're right. Even if we do, it can't be for the same reason, because it's the middle of the season now. We're on the cusp of the second half. And if all we have of Michael Franco after this many years is, well, he pushed past 270 batting average going into the second half of his, what, third, fourth year with the team? Like,
yeah,
that's not what the Phillies wanted. And so, unfortunately, you know, I've been sitting here thinking, like, Michael Franco's doing great. Oh, he's producing more. He's hitting more. He's being closer to the kind of player we want to see. He's not quite there yet. But then just hearing you say that, yeah, I think all he's doing right now is upping his trade value. Unfortunately, I have to agree with you.
Yeah.
It's a shame. But yeah, this is it's still not what I think the Phillies wanted to see from third base at this point.
I think the only reprieve he would have, and I've seen this argument from people on Twitter, and I don't agree with it, but if the Phillies do sign Manny Machado has basically said he's only going to sign with the team if they let him play shortstop, which then puts the Phillies in a different position. Manny Machado's your shortstop. So then you have to make a choice, okay, Michael Franco or J.P. Crawford. And we just have seen less than 60 games of J.P. Crawford, but I've seen so many fans who are ready to jettison J.P. Crawford in exchange for keeping Michael Franco at third base. And to me, that just... And I get, you know, what we've seen from J.P. Crawford at the major league level has not been impressive just yet. And I understand that in his for most of his time at AAA, he did not perform very well. He got a lot of negative publicity last year when Baseball America dropped him down in their top 100. And, you know, I get that. I get that his stock fell, but it rose again. And that's why he got promoted last year. And we saw that in the last month last year, he performed pretty well, not batting average-wise, but definitely on base percentage. And we've seen this year, he's had a couple of small stretches where he's done well. He just hasn't been on the field this year. And I just I'm astonished by the number of people who are choosing right now Michael Franco over J.P. Crawford after we've seen four seasons of Michael Franco and less than 60 games of J.P. Crawford. We know what Franco is, I feel. And we don't know what J.P. Crawford is. What J.P. Crawford is could be really great, and I'm not giving up J.P. Crawford for a two-month rental of Manny Machado. I'm just not doing it because Manny Machado signed someplace else. Now you don't have J.P. Crawford, a potential shortstop who can be an anchor for 10 years, or Manny Machado to show for it, and then you're left with Scott Kingery at short or bringing back Freddie Galvis or some kind of nonsense like that.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. And if that's a choice people want to make,
come on, guys.
Yeah, come on. Like, people are very quick to make decisions. I don't know where people get like locked into these things. And, you know, granted, we're not above getting locked into biases or views that are more subjective than anything else. But
sure.
At the same time, you log on to Twitter some days and just see the conversations that are going on. It's like, well, Michael Franco is good now. And J.P. Crawford, you know, I don't know what, like he's an injury risk or his numbers in the minors. I looked them up. They're not that good. I don't know what to tell you guys. At this point, this team is still developing pieces. And Michael Franco is a little different because he's been in the microwave a lot longer than a lot of these other guys. So I feel like you do know what you have with him. And a guy like Crawford, who has been the top prospect for so long, you don't. And what you do know is very promising. So, you know, I get why the argument exists. I'm not going to like come down on people and be like, you're stupid for thinking that. But at the same time, it's not that difficult of a debate for me.
No, it's not for me either. And I get the argument that Franco, I think he just turned 26. If he's not, he's at the end of his age. He's at the tail end of his age 25, but I think he just turned 26 years old. And, you know, we've seen other players like Adrian Beltre and stuff like that figure it out at age 26. But again, you know, we're talking about, you know, four seasons. It is possible Franco could figure it out in Philadelphia or figure it out someplace
else. He's going to figure it out somewhere else. Like, I can't, that's the addendum of this. He will be wearing another uniform and he will be like an excellent player. It's going to suck. Like, everyone just needs to get ready for that. The stars are aligning for that situation.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I get it. Everyone needs to understand that's going to happen.
And I can't guarantee you J.P. Crawford's going to be a good player. I can't guarantee that stuff, but I would rather take that chance. I'd rather roll the dice that J.P. Crawford will be a good player than Michael Franco will be a good player if I'm forced between those two at third base. The Phillies could just decide to do something completely different and bring in a third baseman and a shortstop in free agency next year and throw everything out the window. So you never know what's going to happen here in free agency. Also, he asked, is Kingery Crawford at shortstop good enough to make the playoffs? They're half a game in front in the National League East right now with those two there and have a couple game lead on the wild card. So I would say at the moment, yeah, Kingery Crawford at shortstop is good enough to make the playoffs in the National League this year. I think we have time for maybe two more here, Justin. Let's do Rob Falcone. This was a fun one. At Just Effing Demo, I think is what this Twitter handle is. And he asks, all right, one game playoff, which the Phillies might play in this year. Who do you pick to start? 1997 Schilling, which is that 300 strikeout season that Curt Schilling had. 2008 Cole Hamels, and I'm going to just say 2008 playoff Cole Hamels, just for the sake of fun, because I think that's what we're talking about here. 2011 Roy Halladay, or this year's Aaron Nola. And he also asked if we could start adding Hit and Season episodes to Google Play again. I thought Hit and Season was on Google Play. I'll have to check that out. So, Rob, I'll look into that and see what's going on there. But anyway, Justin, I'll ask you first. Who would you pick to start a one-game wildcard playoff, 97 Schilling, 08 Hamels, 2011 Doc, or this year's Aaron Nola?
2011 Doc. It's not even really that close, to be honest. Nobody was as dominant and as Roy Halladay was. Cole Hamels in 2008 was magnificent. He was a terrific pitcher. Roy Halladay just wasn't susceptible to imperfections at times. And yeah, that's not going to be the case over a 162-game season. But we're talking about a one-game playoff. And nobody was a better one-game pitcher than Roy Halladay. Like, that to me is, if you have the choice to start him in a one-game playoff, then you have an instant advantage. So, especially those years, 2010, 2011, when he was at his most dominant as a member of the Phillies, those were some unstoppable years. I don't even recall him, like, when were the rough patches in those years? He won the Cy Young the year before and came. He was the runner-up to Clayton Kershaw in 2011. So, yeah, I would definitely go with 2011 Doc. You acquire him to be a part of a playoff rotation. So a one-game playoff is exactly what he's built for.
Yeah, in 2011 Doc, he won game one of that series against the Cardinals, but didn't pitch great. He gave up three runs. They were in a hole early with Doc on the mound, but then he had that magnificent game five where he lost 1-0, basically the game that ended his career, that game five against Chris Carpenter, which we don't like to talk about in Philly all that much. And we saw Doc throw a playoff no-hitter, but we also saw him lose game one of the National League Championship Series in a duel against Tim Lincecum where he got outpitched. So, I mean, none of these guys are perfect. You can say the same thing about Curt Schilling. In 93, when Curt Schilling had that great run, he got knocked around in game one of the World Series. We saw him with the Red Sox get knocked around a little bit. I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to go, and as much as I don't like the guy, I'm going to pick 97 Schilling. I still have not seen as dominant a season as Curt Schilling was that year. I mean, I saw 08 Hamels just had it going on, but Hamels was essentially a two-pitch pitcher, and I don't think a two-pitch pitcher is going to do as well in today's baseball. I love that 2008 Cole Hamels run, and I think 2018 Nola has been phenomenal because Nola does get a lot of swing and miss, and he does keep the ball in the yard. But I haven't, you know, I'd like to see more from Aaron Nola, more of a track record. I've seen Curt Schilling when he's at the top of his game in a playoff game, and it's there are a few guys who could do it like that, and 97 Schilling was probably his most dominant season. He was unbelievable for a horrible baseball team that year. So I don't know, man. If you held a gun to my head right now, it's between that Schilling and that Doc for me, but I'm probably going 97 Schilling in a one-game playoff. But that's a great question, man.
Yeah, that was a really good one.
Let's see if we can squeeze one more in here. Let's go to Matt Wilcox. Did Matt ask two? Did we get one from Matt already? No, okay. This is Matt Wilcox. He's at Matty Wills. He said, I'm going to go with question number two here, Matt. Which player currently on the team is the safest jersey purchase? I got to think it's Aaron Nola, right, Justin? I mean, you know, he's the all-star. He's the guy. He's with Kingery, you know you have 6 years of Scott Kingery. You know, so if you're talking about just strictly a guy who's going to be on the team, Kingery is probably the safest bet, but I also don't think Aaron Nola is going anywhere. And I do think they'll figure out a way to keep him. You know, he's here for at least another, I think this is his third season, so he's probably here for another three seasons after this. I can't believe they're going to let Aaron Nola go anywhere if he continues to pitch like this. So for me, it's probably Aaron Nola. What do you think?
Yeah, that's who popped into my head. I think Rhys Hoskins and Odubel Herrera are safe jersey purchases as well. But Aaron Nola, obviously, right now, like you said, he and Hoskins are considered face of the franchise. Hoskins was trotted out all winter long at other events. The Phillies were gleefully making him the face of their franchise over the winter. Why not Gabe Kapler? Doesn't seem like he's probably going to go anywhere anytime soon. So.
Did you see that Jason Stark named him his National League Manager of the Year for the first half?
I did. And, I mean, it's a solid pick. Like, again,
Very solid.
I don't think we can make that argument without being too subjective about it. Like, that's typically an award that's given to guys who inherit a team that was underperforming or sucking, and is being rebuilt or readjusted, and have to take on this very challenging role of a guy who is unfamiliar to the locker room, maybe unfamiliar to a lot of the players, and in this case, a lot of young players, a lot of guys without major league experience. And he has zero major league managing experience too. So I think he fits the mold of a typical manager of the year, and the Phillies are in first place after finishing.
Yep.
What did they finish in last place last year? I can't remember.
Yeah, they finished in last place. They were they were the third pick in the draft overall this year. I think only the Giants were number two, and the Tigers were number one. So yeah, they were in last season. I think it's been a 23-game turnaround. I saw the stat earlier this morning, and it's the number's escaping me, but it's something like that, a 23-game turnaround between last year and this year at this point in the season, which is just
for
crazy.
A guy who we were talking about very early in the season as you know a team's not going to fire a manager just out of pure embarrassment like that quickly. But we were already saying, like, well, this is really embarrassing. So maybe they just view this as like a fun experiment that ended a lot sooner than they thought it was going to. For a guy like that to be on Jason Stark's Manager of the Year ballot halfway through the season, yeah, I think it's totally appropriate. Like, look what the team's done. Look what the clubhouse has been like. Look at what the effect he's had on his players. Look at the things his players have said about him. I think it's a good pick.
Yeah, he's certainly not Cardinals coach manager Mike
Good
Matheny,
Lord.
Who's encouraging. What an awful manager! I mean, encouraging. If you guys haven't seen the story, check it out. I mean, it's online. You'll be able to find it. But Mike Matheny encouraging some of his veteran players to basically torment Jordan Hicks, the guy who throws 104, 105 miles an hour every time he makes a mistake, to help him improve as a player. And this is something Matheny thinks the game's gotten too soft and players need to just be on top of each other and ridiculing other players and stuff like that to the point of torture. And even Hicks said, Hicks was asked by a reporter, you think this is going to help you at all? He's like, I don't know, man. I mean,
what a
it's
dumb
clear
team.
He hates it.
And like also just, Bud Norris, still in Major League Baseball, had no idea. He's the Cardinals' closer? Like, what? Did not realize that.
Yeah, they tried to bring in Greg Holland to take the job late in spring, and that did not work out. Well, listen, that's all the time we have for the mailbag. But Justin, I'm glad you were able to sit in with me here on the Thursday Night Edition. And again, folks, if you haven't become a Patreon member of Hit and Season, then you're missing me and Justin and Liz talking about this stuff every Sunday night. We do it every Sunday night. Justin and Liz and I, we get together and we talk Phil's baseball. Make sure you go to patreon.com/hittandseason and become a $5 a month Patreon member, and you can get Hit and Season and Justin's podcast that he does with Liz called Continued Success. And you are most likely, if you are a listener of this podcast, you should be a subscriber to Justin's other podcast. Justin has just become a podcast machine called The Dirty Inning, which takes a look at some of the worst innings in Phillies history along with Dr. Trevor Strunk. And they do that every couple of weeks. I have a new episode come out. It's hysterical. If you like Phillies baseball and you like to bust a gut laughing, you want to make sure that you become a subscriber to Hit and Season as well. And Justin and Liz and I hope to have some exciting news for you about these three podcasts coming up here in the next few weeks or so. So make sure that you stay tuned for that. And again, you can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. And Justin, thanks so much for hopping back on here on the Thursday night edition of the show, buddy. I appreciate it.
Of course, John, anytime.
And then we'll do our stat of the week here real quick. And this was noted by the Twitter handle at 2008 Phils. Through 92 games, the 2018 Phillies have a 52-40 record. The 2008 Phillies were three games worse, 49-43. The 1980 Phillies were four games worse, 48 and 44. And again, the only team during that 2007 to 2011 run to have a better record at this point in the season was that 2011 crew that went on to win 102 games. This 2018 Phillies team outpacing the other five Phillies teams that won the National League East from 2007 to 2010. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of the podcast. My thanks again to Justin for helping me out on the mailbag this week. If you haven't done so, guys, head on over to Apple Podcasts, subscribe to this podcast, subscribe to The Dirty Inning. Make sure you leave a rating and a review. And if you haven't, again, become a Patreon member, do that. Go to patreon.com/hittinseason, become a $5 a month Patreon member, and get an extra episode of this podcast per week and continued success as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I'll talk to you all next time on episode number 200 of Hittin' Season.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, on the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.